This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The eagle has landed. Equal.
And that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened.
Tú que un berimbau, te voy a enseñar.
Olala,
solteme a lua, fique de perna prua.
Tu peu bate, meia lua passou.
We're pursuing the solution, it is the revolution.
Must invent or reinvent a sustainable human culture by a descent into our pre-rational, our instinctive resources. What is needed is not transcendence, but incendence. I really like this quote from Thomas Berry, essentially saying each and every one of us has to go through our own initiatory journey through the underworld, so to speak, of our souls. And by doing such, we can return to where we came from, but with a new gift, with new energy, to make effective, positive change. Each and every one of us, according to mythologist Joseph Campbell, has our own hero's journey. And we cannot simply think our ways to solving whatever problem we need to solve. As Albert Einstein noted, no problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. Perhaps it could be a little difficult to think about what this really means, but look no further than those examples of the past given by Crazy Horse, Gandhi, Jesus, Buddha, Mother Teresa, whom all have crossed their own barriers into the psycho-spiritual realms with soul-rooted, deep revelations, visions, and dreams, and coming back and making their difference on humanity. This inevitably leads me to ask, what is this journey for you? What is this journey for me? What are your barriers into the exotic psycho-spiritual realm from which to retrieve the gift to humanity, but having to fight the mythological dragon in the process? Who is this dragon for you? Maybe you're already fighting this dragon and you're not even aware of it, that you are the hero in the underworld. And perhaps you do realize it, but you may feel despaired, hopeless, just don't see no way out, no way to push forward. The dragon may seem too overwhelming for you to even handle and comprehend a life on the other side. But let me tell you, the other side exists, and it's there, and it waits for you. Today I have a very special guest where we talk about this in length. Her name is Nicole Hartley Bradford from Calgary, Alberta, and she has founded the project Awakening the Village. So without further ado, welcome Nicole. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Nicole Hartley Bradford, and I am working on, you know, awakening the village. That's my thing. I came up with a tagline for it today. It was inspiring and facilitating the conversations that lead to the actions that create the village it takes. Mm. And right now I'm in a phase of it where I've been hopefully inspiring people and facilitating conversations for like 5 years now, specific to the co-creation of the village it takes. And, but just in the last like 2 months, really, I've got down to getting more businessy about it, which I was super reluctant to do because I'm more of a give it away kind of girl.
Right.
But I was also, and I wasn't doing that well financially. So I realized that if I want to do this as my full-time activity, then I need to create some income streams for myself. So I've been, and this has been super helpful because I've been learning about business and it's making me look at it a lot more, finely, like way more in focus and close up and wow, what I'm doing? And how can I make it more of a tangible thing that people can understand? And So I've been working on that, developing some super clear courses, really. And under each course theme, I can vector it down into like a 20-minute talk or vector it up into like a year-long program that a person can then continue on for life.
Like, wow.
Focusing on how they can be the seed of a village.
And this is in the works, or you've already created these courses?
I'm working on the curriculum, but I've already started taking registrations for February, when I'm going to be starting, I call it Project Salvage, Seed a Living Village to Save the World. And it's just 7 movements that people can like participate in order to become the seed for a living village of their own.
And if someone listening to this and they immediately resonate with this and they want to look for your course, what would be the first place to go and find it?
Oh, the first place would be to go on Facebook and search Awakening the Village YYC. That's right now the only online platform that I really have. I had to let everything else go while I focused on building it kind of in this new, more strong and tangible way. Mm-hmm. And starting in February, it will be an in-person course based out of Calgary, Alberta, where I live.
Nice.
Up here in Canada.
Okay.
But part of what I'll be doing with the in-person workshops is doing video that will then be translated into a video webinar. But if people go to join the Awakening the Village YYC group, they'll get the updates about how they can then access the video webinar starting later in the spring.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be so great to have people.
Well, that leads me to ask, so how, you know, could you talk more about the seeding of the content that you're using for these courses? Like, where did this all come from you? What's the birthplace? What's the birth story of this, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Great question. While I'm still pregnant. I think, anyway, I'm not sure. It's the hard thing about birthing a movement is you never know quite what stage you're at.
Right.
But what I do know is that for a really long time now, like at least 7 clear years, I've been working on kind of making myself into the seed of a village. And recently someone said, you know, what have you already done that you can share with people and tell them about and teach them about so that they could do it too? And I was like, oh my gosh, I've become a seed for a village. I really have. I have yet to be transplanted perhaps, but I am a seed and I've sprouted. So, then they asked, well, you know, what were the steps you took? Like what's the process? Mm-hmm. So that you can take other people through it. And it's such a great question. And I ended up identifying kind of these 7 movements. And the first one was to really get to know myself better, like get to know who I am, how I'm made, what I really love, and what I really kind of stand for. And then once I've got that kind of underway to a new level, because I think we're always kind of peeling the layers of the onion of that, right?
Of course.
Once I've got that, I can start to really get to know what my vision is for the ultimate life in the ultimate village that would suit me, would suit my tastes, would suit my kind of resources or ideas of how I want to live. So that's the second movement. Then the third one is to get really clear about what the values are underlying those ideas. Like, if I want to live way out in nature, what are the values that have to do with what makes me want that as a kind of strategy? So I might value like order and harmony and nature and authenticity, maybe. So if I can get really clear on what the values are, then I'm not good at counting, so I'm on 4 steps. I don't have any notes here. I don't have my binder in front of me.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
But after the vision and the value steps, then the next step is about sharing that vision and those values with other people mm-hmm. super clearly. And like, that's something I see you doing, right? Like you're doing that by doing podcasts, by sharing about how to build a village and your ideas of your village and other villages. So you've gone to lots of villages and you've seen lots of different ways that people are doing it. And now you're sharing about that, right? So then once we share about it, lo and behold, we end up meeting people, right?
Right.
Who resonate with what we're putting out and the vision and values that are part of that. And then once we've started connecting with those people, the next step that I identified is that we start to do exchanges with them to get to know them better, to get to find out more clearly whether our values and our vision do fit with each other. And then as we meet more people and get to know them better and start to do these exchanges, even if it's something like this, like creating one podcast episode together, mm-hmm. we just find out more information that informs how they might or might not fit with us, and then how we can support in a mutually beneficial way what each other's up to. And then when that goes well with the people with whom it goes well with, then we can move on to the next step, which is creating something together. So something more tangible that maybe has like economic elements, like maybe we'd put on an event together, or maybe we'd take a trip together, or something that just had us interacting in ways that tested our trust once we've built it by doing some exchanges. And then the next step is one that just kind of blows my mind, actually, and it is applying feedback loops. So what we do after our trip, and maybe what we'd even do after our podcast episode, is go through a feedback process that helps us identify what went really well, what didn't go so well, what we would add if we were going to do it again, and then ask the question, like, should we do it again? Should we do something else? And then anticipates what we might do and then starts to plan it.
And so, sorry to cut you off, but with applying this feedback process, that would be like self-intentional. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, and anyone can initiate it, and the seeds of the living village after they've gone through the project mm-hmm. will know, like, hey, let's do it, to ask, right? To offer it, to say, hey, let's do a feedback. Are you open to doing a feedback kind of session on this? And I have my feedback kind of method that I've used that is also another kind of standalone thing that I'll teach people, but it's part of the salvage, project.
Okay.
As the seventh step, I call it crapping. Yeah. Right. There's so much humor involved, but it's so poignant to me, because I think that when we are dealing with a feedback process, it really is like looking at the kind of maybe potentially the stinkiest, grossest outcome of what we did, and turning it into fertilizer rather than having it be toxic waste that builds up because we didn't handle it or manage it well.
Right.
And it just makes everything go to you know what instead of become fertilizer for our next thing. And something I also want to point out about the seven movements of the Project Salvage are that, in a way, the last two movements are the first two movements, because here we are living life, interacting with people, doing things with them. We are kind of subconsciously or semi-consciously always applying some kind of critical retrospective to what we've done. And when we get to a point where we're like, you know what, I want to do something different or something new, or I want to do something not the way I've been doing it because I don't like the results I'm getting, And then we kind of start at this, the top, right? Okay, what do I need to do? What do I know about myself now that I learned from that kind of maybe disappointing experience or from that great experience that makes me want to do more of this something new stuff and get me out of patterns and into new ones? And I think that that's kind of the paradigm shift that, that a lot of us who are kind of identifying the idea of a village as something new and exciting and needed that will meet more needs more of the time. Mm-hmm. And so do you see that? Do you see how that kind of last two steps kind of are the first two steps?
Yeah.
That brings someone into a project like this.
Right. I really, really like this because it also helps those who, I mean, I feel like this concept too is a little bit abstract when we talk about creating villages with, when the majority of the people are, you know, in cities or the suburbs or just in different kinds of living situations of which they think is the only thing out there.
Yeah.
It's quite abstract to kind of get going with this, but with your steps that you've just explained here, I think it's very applicable and understandable by any individual. I think this is genius. it's pretty good because it's like, okay, you know, I get it. I want to live in a village. It makes sense, but come on now. I mean, how is this even possible? But with this step, it's easily organized. It's organized and it's like a step-by-step process of which you begin with yourself. And so if it facilitates that personal growth aspect as well, which is also very important within all of this. And, I don't know. I think I like it. I really like it. So,
thanks
for sharing that.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's really encouraging to hear that it's tangible to you because that's one of the challenges that I've had. People say, what's awakening the village? And I'm like, it's so many things. How can I narrow it down to like one thing that you'll understand?
It's difficult finding those few select keywords to grasp everything you want to convey.
Yeah.
So I think podcasts are pretty cool because it's, you know, you could, it's just a space to kind of describe all these things more in depth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where we're living in a world with like, you know, limited word expressions from Twitter or Facebook or whatever.
Right. I only get how many characters?
I know. So, well, shoot, let's see where do we go from here then. Let's take this back and how from creating this, what has been your background story of which compelled you to all of this? Like why does it make sense for you? Or, you know, what was your original inspiration, I guess, or pain or whatever it was?
Yeah. This is where I could really get talking for hours. So I'm going to try and really get succinct here.
Okay.
I think that I've been, ever since I was a little girl, having experiences that kind of like hurt because I didn't have a village, and also having experiences that were really, really amazing from the little bits and pieces of what I got that were villagey. I grew up as part of a church community. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, my family would go to a church camp and we would live for a week at this cool little camp on this sweet little lake and eat together with people. We'd do churchy things together. The kids would do crafts and play games together. We'd live in a little cabin or in our tent trailer while we were there. And we formed this little temporary, really kind of intimately connected community for a week. And I remember loving it. And then we'd go home, right? And then I'd experience also, kind of the dark side of the intimately connected temporary or full-time, more longer-term community, you know, where people maybe were not being that kind to each other. There might be interpersonal conflict. I certainly, in the context of my school community, I experienced being bullied. And so even in my childhood, I was having these experiences that gave me contrast of kind of the light and the dark of, you know, community and human social interaction. But then something that happened later in life was really huge for me. I became a mom really young, when I was 20 years old, and it wasn't in the context of a stable partnership, and it wasn't in the context of me having even a stable, like, home or town that I was living in. I was in that phase of life where, you know, young adults kind of move around a lot and try a bunch of new different things. I ended up finding out I was going to be a mother, and it was, I mean, this was a dream come true for me because I'd always wanted to be a mother. And, you know, I was young enough that my frontal cortex wasn't completely formed. I was super naive about becoming a mom so young without having established a home base, a career, a partnership in which one could bring a child, you know, with, and be able to anticipate that their needs were really going to be met. You know, I knew I was going to be this loving mom. That was enough, which is, you know, got its beauty. And also it, you know, you can kind of see the setup. So I ended up, you know, birthing into a beautiful midwife community. And then also being really isolated too. So yeah, I mean, there's so much story in there, but a lot of pain from the isolation and the lack of resources and the lack of connected social context. My family, my birth family of origin was going through a lot right away within months of my son being born. My dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer and we lost him like less than 2 years later. So, and he was the core of my life, like that core was, you know, ripped away from me. So I continued to live in this kind of middle ground between community. I lived in a part of the world that there were a lot of hippies and a lot of nature and a lot of potlucks and a lot of getting together in circles. And yet I was alone with my child a lot of the time, struggling to provide. And, you know, from there, it kind of continued on like that for a while. I had a second son as a single mother. Poverty was a huge factor. Lack of resources and the need to be resourceful became another huge, like, compelling, like, necessity of invention, right?
Yeah.
And then I married into a family that was part of a very integrated community, a meditation and healing center that I was a student at, as I kind of tried to work on these inner parts of me that needed healing so I could be the mother I wanted to be. I had sought out help and found this meditative yogic healing center. And then that marriage, within the context of that marriage, I became kind of the classic urban housewife, you know, kind of stuck in her four walls with lots of children to look after. I had two more daughters in my marriage. And so we were dealing with a mixed step family. We were dealing with being in another new place to live too, because we'd had to move. And I was ripped up inside so much of the time, just trying to meet everyone's needs. And it's just being me and my husband. The relationship suffered, and I ended up becoming suicidal. So that's how bad it got for me. That's how much I was really hurting. And that's how hopeless I got, was that I actually believed for just a few moments one day that everyone would be better off without me, because I was failing miserably at meeting everyone's needs. Luckily, I don't know, I think divine intervention is what actually happened, but I ended up being able to kind of pull myself around. It did mean that my marriage ended, And that was very, very difficult time for me. I was very unsupported. I didn't have family nearby. I was dealing with so much guilt and remorse and hopelessness still. But I was also underneath this very determined person. I had a new lease on life. I was going to do what I was really here to do. And the work of my yoga and meditation healing center years, I really wanted to put that into use. And I really wanted to put the permaculture training I'd done as a young single mom in that hippie world to use. And I really wanted to find people of like mind and like heart for myself so that I could become part of a more integrative, supportive community and start living with more abundance. You know, I was homeless after my marriage ended because I didn't have the income that I needed to maintain a home. And what was the most devastating part of it for me was that I lost my everyday job as a mom. I had to give my daughters into their dad's care. The courts weren't involved at all. It's just something I knew I needed to do because of poverty. And then I just started trying to pull together community. And that's when Awakening Cafe was born, which was kind of the seed of Awakening the Village. I started to just bring people together to have conversations about the village it takes, which was a phrase that had just come to me over and over. It takes a village. It takes a village. It takes a village, not just to raise a child, but to keep a grown up strong and juicy and engaged and mm-hmm. alive, you know, right. And also later I added, it takes a village to honor an elder, to give an elder purpose and place and belonging. Mm. So they're not just, you know, like swept away into a old folks home to wait out their time. And then also just this piece where it also became just so clear and important. And I think that right now people are becoming even more clear that it takes a village, a connected, intimate community to steward a land base so that that land and the flora and fauna upon it can really thrive so that we humans don't have to go extinct mm-hmm. along with so many other species that are really, you know, that have been lost, and there's a little bit of a landslide going on, I'm afraid. And I just, you know, even if we can't turn it around, I'm determined that I'm going to put my all into trying to.
And when you talk about that divine intervention, what made it so that you chose hope versus despair? Because there's so many people with this exact same situation right now. And unfortunately, a lot of them choose the despair route and then it's over. What made it different for you? What was that like?
I've hit that point twice. And the first time when I was, you know, the urban housewife with just so much pressure on me, the divine intervention that occurred was I literally heard a voice that said, no child is better off with a mother who kills herself. And you've got four. And I literally, my foot moved onto the brake and I didn't, you know, like move into the car accident that I had kind of chosen as my way out. And then the second time it happened 2.5 years ago, which doesn't seem like a very long time ago, though by now it feels like a long time ago. And I had a different kind of hopelessness. I had been working on Awakening Cafe, and I'd founded Awakening House Temporary Permaculture Ashram in Calgary. And I just had a day where I put so much into hosting an event, and I had had one person show up, and I was just so, so exhausted, tired of trying, tired of inviting people and encouraging them and setting it all up and showing up and being there. And I just felt so hopeless. And what saved me that day was the kind of deeply rooted belief that I was built for something and that I needed to give it my all. Even if no one showed up, I needed to be devoted to it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also needed someone else. And I luckily that day did have someone else there with me who said to me, I want you to stay. I want you to be here. I want you to do you. And that was kind of the critical points that all came together that day to give me a new lease on life. And since that day, I have not had that tendency come back. I know that I think that I've been on the slippery slope of that tendency, and which kind of leads me to talk about something that is so core to everything I'm up to that I think is the glue that can really like connect people. And that is the ability to communicate empathy so that we can have our feelings validated and honored and have room for them to move and clear and have those emotions come out of us and have our needs and our longings and our values and our desires also validated, and to have people around us who are saying to us and to be able to tell ourselves from the inside, your needs matter and I'm going to help you meet them.
And this is something to when you now awaken the village or awakening the village. These are kind of like some of the things you guys work over or workshops, or you guys do workshops in regards to this and the empathetic communication training. And
yeah. Yeah. The empathetic communication training is super core. It comes up in all the offerings. It's kind of worked in somehow everywhere. And it's something that, especially over the last year, I've made a personal commitment to learning how to give myself empathy. At first, my commitment was to learning how to give other people empathy. Even though I thought I was pretty good at it, I had had a few things happen that showed me that I actually wasn't.
Mm.
But what happened when I tried to get better at giving other people empathy was that I realized that I sucked at it if I was the one who was needing empathy. So yeah. Then I reworked my commitment into something that I think of as like empathy first for me. So that then, you know, a lot of this comes from nonviolent communication training. Mm-hmm. And I just laugh because when I first encountered nonviolent communication, what turned me off it was that I didn't like when other people MVC'd me. And what I realized is that my commitment to giving other people empathy was kind of a backhanded strategy to get empathy from other people because I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of worked out that wrinkle and really started to just focus on how can I give myself empathy so that I've got my cup full and then I can give empathy for the sake of giving empathy rather than for the sake of kind of trying to get someone in good shape so they could give me empathy.
Right, right. That's interesting. And how do you do that? Like for you, like when you've given yourself empathy, you know?
Well, I needed a tool because I, like I said, I sucked at it. And what I generally kind of have to, you know, I think this is one of the hardest things about being human is that these empathy skills aren't something that a lot of us really grow up with. So I use a tool and it's a set of flashcards, like elementary, like preschool level. These are the feelings, and the feelings kind of land in kind of on a duality kind of scale. There's the feelings that we get when our needs, values, longings, and desires aren't being sufficiently met. And they are unpleasant feelings. And then there's the feelings that we get when our needs, longings, values, desires are being met.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the feelings everyone wants to have. And then there are the needs, longings, values, and desires. So The tool I use is called the Love Smart Cards, and it's got four decks in it. So the first is those unpleasant feelings. The second is the pleasant feelings. And then there's a deck that's twice as big that just has flashcards that say one word on them. And each word is one of the needs, values, longings, and desires that are universal to humans. And then the fourth deck is, again, just the words that speak to the character strengths that humans can have. And these are the things that I can kind of pull up in myself in order to face the challenges life is bringing and get my needs, values, longings, and desires met more of the time under my own autonomy so that I can get more of those pleasant feelings and less of the unpleasant feelings.
So it's kind of like a self-reminder you carry around with you, the deck.
Yep.
Okay.
I sure do. It's one of the objects I carry around in what I call my medicine bag. And if I ever get into upset, or if I even am kind of walking around confused about something, I'm getting better and better at remembering to take out the cards, just go through them, the unpleasant feelings first, which ones am I feeling? And it is so illuminating sometimes. I am constantly surprised to find out I'm feeling something that
Right. Even
that I didn't really realize I was feeling. I was just feeling it. And then I was trying to mitigate it by doing things or not doing things. But with the awareness that going through the cards provides, I often completely change track. And boy, does it go better?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because, you know, without any kind of aid or you know, taking that upon oneself, you know, you could just easily just be led astray by what your feelings are. Like if you're resentful right? or whatever, and then you just all of a sudden 2 days pass and you're like, oh my God, what have I become?
Right.
I always really like rereading that Native American proverb with the feeding the white wolf versus the black wolf. Because it happens every single second, you know, like kind of what Viktor Frankl has written in his book, The Man's Search for Meaning, was that the ultimate human freedom is the ability to choose. But that the ability to choose happens every millisecond. So that's pretty key, because, you know, that's our ultimate freedom. So
we have to exploit
it to the max. And I think that's brilliant with the cards. You know, it's just a reminder that we are, you know, we can control this and to not be, lead astray by whatever emotions arise. And that leads me to ask too, like talking about this, we're talking about it, you know, within the personal dimension, but when it comes to an interpersonal dimension, what has your experience been in terms of, you know, like social reconciliation or like conflict mediation? Because these emotions happen within every one of us, but when we put two of each other together and let's say both are angry, you know, how does that then, what does that look like?
Oh, yeah. Great question. And so super relevant, because any group of people who have tried to create some kind of intentional community, whether it's that nuclear family unit or, you know, a big eco village somewhere, inevitably, if it goes badly, it's because there was interpersonal conflict that couldn't be resolved. And what I've learned is that my ability to give myself empathy means that then I can come back to whatever conversation with a lot more clarity of mind and a lot stronger will to become effective at solving the problem. And for me, this is a key step to any restorative process at all, whether it's restorative justice in when some kind of harm's been done, whether it's reconciliation of any kind at all, being able to get the empathy so that I can actually heal from the adverse experience and maybe even heal from the prior adverse experiences that I had in my developmental years or that I inherited from my line of ancestry. Because if there's a long-standing trauma in my family, I'm gonna perpetuate that unless I heal it. So this whole like providing myself empathy in order that I can heal whatever I've got in my system going on, so that then I can come into relationship with other people, be less often triggered into that fight, flight, freeze nervous system situation, mm-hmm. and then behave from that place of choice that you were talking about. Because as long as I have that unresolved stuff in me, it's like I don't even have choice. I just react. But if I can resolve that stuff and come from a place of choice where I'm like, oh, I can stay curious. I can stay open. I can say, hey, what happened there for you? Instead of being like, oh, what happened there for me is this, 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 and it's all your fault. I can actually be like, oh, you reacted there. What was it about the situation that had you feeling like you needed to protect yourself or push yourself or shut down? Mm-hmm. And then I can become an agent, you know, through which change can occur and resolution can occur. And then progress can be made and we can start co-creating again. Or we can decide that, you know what, we're going to just back off from each other, join a different tribe, try again. I mean, just with the new knowledge we've gained, with the healing that we hopefully gained. And then again, like going back to that shared vision and values, like to find the people that really fit with us.
Yeah. And, this is probably one of the most, key deciding factors, you know, of keeping any, community together, whether in business, eco village, what have you. And I know, when I first got involved into these village settings, I was mostly just thinking in terms of the physicality of, natural building and all this. And once we do that, everything will be fine. But, you know, but yeah. this is the part that, you know, gets overlooked, I guess. And handling these situations. And it also, you know, learning in, Finhorn, Scotland or other, places where they've really kind of honed in onto these, subject matters, you know, leads me to think and about the importance of, mutual agreement of certain spiritual understandings. I don't know if mm-hmm. like, you know, if everyone's on the same page in terms of like, for example, from the book, The Four Agreements by, mm-hmm. John Miguel.
Yeah.
You know, like don't take anything personal because whatever happens from another person is because of them, not because of you. You know, mm-hmm. if everyone had that level of understanding, I think once conflicts arise, you know, they won't be so ugly, you know, because fundamentally we've gotten that kind of straightened out in our own understanding. So that kind of leads me to believe too. So when we're as a way of maybe kind of like preventative medicine of like diseases, what, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of things could we do that would be, you know, preventative, medicine in terms of like for conflicts, you know?
So
what kind of activities or focuses would that lead a group to, you know, learn, you know, exploit and so on and so forth. And that's what gets into the whole art form of where all, you know, the exciting stuff about venturing into this, this new paradigm. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of different groups seeing what that is like for themselves, but
yeah.
Well, let's see. So for someone who, let's say, you know, is really bitter at the moment and they feel like they can't let go, you know, and they know forgiving is the way to go, but they just can't. Do you have like an easy answer for that?
Oh, well, I have a lot of empathy for that because I've been that person, mm-hmm. you know, and it sucks to even like you can know with your head that you need to let go and that you need to forgive and that you can even want to get there. But until you're actually there, it's like, it's almost impossible. It's like holding on is something that we do, I think, so so like sub and semi-consciously. We sometimes don't even realize we're doing it. We feel the tightness, we feel the hardness, but how to let go is completely different. And I think that that's where empathy is so powerful, because when someone is providing us empathy, or we start to provide it for ourselves, we actually start to feel emotionally safe. And with that emotional safety comes a change in us that just starts to let go. And I think what was such a key understanding for me is that when I learned that crying and making sound and breathing and moving with grief, or even with anger at first, in safe ways, obviously, that didn't kind of contage my anger to someone else or distress somebody with my sadness, mm-hmm. When I could let those emotions out, like they really cleaned me. They really changed me. And that was letting go. And I think that often why we don't let go is because we were so shamed, as usually as children, for crying or shouting or yelling or even like telling a story of injustice. You know, like so many of us got, well, what did you do that made them upset with you or made them hurt you? And, you know, as a little kid, you're like, I don't know. I didn't do anything. And, you know, or we start crying and someone says, you know, like sends us to our room. And then we're like, we just learn not to let that stuff out. Mm-hmm. So what I think I would, you know, wish for someone who was holding on and who was bitter was just, oh, I would wish that they could find some safety either in a room on their own, giving themselves empathy and permission to open up and let out their grief, let out their words, their anger, their sadness, or that they might find someone with whom they can, you know, feel safe enough to open up. And you know, sometimes that might mean calling a distress line or going to counseling. And that's where this can become really tricky, because sometimes when we turn to those professional resources, sometimes we aren't met with the depth of empathy that we need in order to feel safe. That was my experience, and that's what led me to actually sequester myself in a safe, small, womby kind of space and let her rip. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to hold space for myself.
And I know I wanted to ask you too, when you talked about the first step with, when you were going over, what would you call them? 7 steps for awakening the village?
Yeah, they're the seven practices or movements, you think of them as.
Okay, 7 movements. And the first one, knowing thyself, what are some tools for one to know oneself better?
Oh, there's so many and they're so fun. One of my actual super favorites that would be so easy for anyone to do is just write down a list of 100 things that you used to love to do as a kid.
Whoa. That's so ironic, because I was doing that yesterday.
What?
Yeah. You know, cause they say, you know, a lot of like, key indications of what you know, your innate talents or curiosities are is right. What you just did when you were a kid, yeah. You know, and that sheds some really good light on your, I guess, destiny. I don't know, yeah. What you should be, yeah, doing.
Yeah. Just how you're made, mm-hmm. and what brings you joy and like how cool when we remember those things and start doing some of them again, because then we're actually like, we're sourcing our own joy just by honoring who we are, how we're made, and what lights us up, and by going and doing it. And mm-hmm. I think that's a really beautiful and pretty easy thing that someone could do, especially if they've, you know, got their latest load of sadness out lately.
Mm-hmm. And what else has been, do you have some other ones too?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been collecting these for so long. one of them is actually like, and I love to do this, like, you know, depending, you kind of, no matter whether you like believe or don't believe in like horoscopes and astrology, mm-hmm. a person can still kind of use horoscopes or astrology as a sounding board for, is this me or is it not me? And it doesn't really matter if it's accurate or not, because it's just a tool to find out more about what really is you.
Right.
So a person could like read, like, I love it. I just flip to the back of a newspaper. You know, you find them in cafes, libraries, doctor's waiting rooms, whatever, all the time. Just flip to your horoscope, read it, and just go, how much of that is relevant to me? What isn't relevant to me? And if you really want to get into it, you can, you know, like there's books and books and books out there that are all based on birth date.
Oh yeah.
From like human design stuff to gene key stuff to numerology to, yeah, classic astrology, astronomy. I always get them mixed up.
The rabbit hole runs deep.
Yeah.
And it kind of like reminds me of analyzing your dreams too, writing down your dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Because it begins that process of just digging into your soul a little bit deeper.
Yeah. I love using dreams for that. And especially the way I like to do it is to think that if everything in my dream was a part of me, what might that mean about how I'm relating to the different parts of me? Hmm.
And what do you think of personality assessments such as the Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram?
Oh, I love those. I love those. Again, kind of whether you believe in them or not, or whether what you read about, quote unquote, yourself is true or not, there's still such great ways to just delve in and explore. And I think what I've learned about those lately is that no matter what I am most of the time, I'll always have moments when I'm more like intuitive or less,
yeah,
like, you know, and I think that once we allow for and include that part of it, that we get a lot more room in there to play and to just discover ourselves.
I think maybe, you know, it's like maybe a center of gravity. Like we could be many personalities, but are like, you know, our center, yeah, of gravity always defaults to a certain one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that, center of gravity.
What is yours, by curiosity?
I forget what my letters are for the Jungian based one, but, I do know my astrology one. I'm a Taurus sun sign with Libra rising. And I interpret that the esoteric way. They say that your rising sign is indicative of more of your soul, and your sun sign is more indicative of your personality. So that, I love that, and it really works for me. I also have a Gemini moon. So, you know, that kind of speaks to my interest in partnership and justice and balance. So does the Libra part. And then I have 5 planets in retrograde, which means that I have a tendency to be misunderstood by regular kind of the status quo, mm-hmm. but that I also kind of have apparently a lot of like esoteric information that can be seen through veils, the veils that, you know, cover me. The retrograde is symbolic of a veil over the planet's wisdom. And so, yeah, that's all fun for me.
Man, I gotta look more into mine too. All I know is just the date. Well, I know when I looked into it, Jupiter kept on coming up a lot, but I think it was, or Saturn. I can't remember. I gotta look more into that. Fall deeper into that rabbit hole.
Have fun.
Yeah. You wouldn't happen to know January 3rd?
Ooh.
I know Capricorn, but that's about all I know.
Yeah. Yeah, Capricorn, you're a goat.
But I know there's a website, I think it was like Cafe Astrology something, you put in like your exact time of birth and your exact location of birth, and it gives you a really detailed report. It's pretty crazy.
Oh, the internet is so awesome for finding out all these kinds of information.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's see. I think, you know, I have lots of questions, but I think for this, I think this is good. I'd like to do this again.
Uh-oh. Deal. Let's.
Let's say, like, maybe closing it up. What are some actionable steps maybe for one who is listening to this that wants to get more deeply entrenched in this world and be more surrounded by like-minded individuals, or just creating this reality for itself, whatever that may be, whether it's living in, you know, off the land within community or whatnot. What are some pointers you have, or immediate pointers, steps?
Well, I hope that everybody does that list of 100 things you used to love to do as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and just gets really more into that center of gravity place you were talking about. Cause to me, that's like ground zero, double zero, here now, me. And then, you know, I think that, you know, if I could choose for everybody, I would give everyone a permaculture course.
Yeah.
Just to really get into like integrative design. And to really get back some love for the natural world and appreciation for the wisdom and intelligence inherent in nature, and just to rev up those engines that help us to want to look after the earth and want to be part of the ecosystem that we actually are. Like every physical body is made of earth, and in order to stay in it in a way that's satisfying, I think that it really helps us to feel part of like the earth and the system that this planet is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd encourage people to do that. I'd also encourage people to, find out what's going on around them, where they might meet like more like-minded people and just have more inspiring conversations and get a bit lit up and motivated towards going further.
Right. And making those constant choices, you know, seeking out the good choices and following that kind of, I've heard this thing the other day of, you know, we're very positive driven. So even if you say, don't do that, you'll focus on that for like when you're skiing down a mountain and you know, you're focusing on not hitting a tree, then all you see is trees.
Yeah.
And then eventually you'll hit a tree. But if you keep focusing, not even focusing on that, but just always reminding yourself, okay, follow the path, and all you see is just a path, and then you're on your way. So I think that, you know, that's very much the same way in going about your own life, is just following that path that you want to go down and not what you don't want, which is very easy to get engulfed in that. But I like what you shared with your tools, like daily reminders or or hourly reminders, whatever. Whatever what your personal situation would be. But well, Nicole, this was fantastic. I really appreciate you sharing everything you shared.
Thank you so much.
We'll definitely have to do this again. And before I let you go, where's the best place for people to find you and learn more about you?
Yeah, really right now it's on Facebook. Nicole Hartley Bradford is my personal profile. I'm still pretty active in that. Awakening the Village YYC is a group people can join. And if they're not into Facebook, my email address is Nicole Bradford, NicoleBradford, followed by the number 110@gmail.com. So Nicole Bradford 110@gmail.com.
Okay. All right, Nicole. Well, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome, Christopher. I look forward to talking to you again.
Likewise. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks. Rock the rest of your day.
All right, you too.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.